Who wants a bunk bed, Bill? There's never been a better time to sign up for a yearly EPP, Extra Podcast Person membership to Real Ghost Stories Online. Right now, when you become a yearly EPP, you'll get 1 month free membership to our EPP programs. You'll also be able to claim your very own Bunk Bed Bell. Plus, you'll be doing your part to help keep our show on the air.
It's amazing. It's all amazing. We feel so much better.
A show that helps thousands of people worldwide.
Thanks again for providing this outlet and making it so non-threatening.
Feel not so alone with their haunting experiences.
You guys are amazing. We listen to you all the time.
Become a yearly EPP now. Get a free month of our EPP membership and get your very own Bunk Bed Bell.
Hurry though, supplies are limited.
If you're currently a monthly EPP, then upgrade your membership now to a yearly membership and get your Bunk Bed Bell and a free month of EPP membership to Real Ghost Stories Online.
I think it's important for people to be able to have a place where they can share their experiences and validate them because these things are real.
Sign up now to be a yearly EPP at ghostpodcast.com. And thanks for your support.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And indeed it is. Phone number 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost stories with us. You can write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Or you can always email your audio file to me, Tony, T-O-N-Y, at realghoststoriesonline.com. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again.
Hi.
You know, here's a horrific thing. I just saw a video of, and when the day we're recording this, there's still a lot of the hurricane aftermath, the horribleness going on. But I saw it was one of those things that you have to look out for. And we were talking yesterday about that, not on the show, just amongst ourselves, of all the stuff that people are wading through, you know, and there's, mm-hmm. there's snakes, there's alligators, there's you
right.
name it. Here's what I didn't think of. I didn't even know it was a thing. Floating fire ant colonies.
No,
yes,
really?
And it was from CBS.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was like the CBS Evening News posted a video of it. It was. I don't know if it was. I think it was just, you know, all the ants came up out of the ground, and they were all like crawling on each other in the water. So whoever's on the bottom is out of luck because you're uh-huh. the ones that are going to drown. But essentially, it's like they turned their friends into giant ant rafts. And then the other ones that were lucky enough to be on the top were all crawling on top. And they're huge. It's like a big old, I mean, it's like a like the size of an inner tube. Just this looks like a floating thing of mud. Then you realize, oh, God, it's a fire ant floating colony.
I used to have to deal with fire ants when I lived in East Texas.
Yeah.
But I had no idea that they would do that.
I didn't know it was a thing. I wonder how common that is, or if it's just kind of a fluke that they all kind of came up out of the water at the right time, and then they
yeah.
were able to essentially turn each other into rafts.
God, that is so painful. Have you ever been bitten by fire
ants? No, I haven't, because we didn't have fire ants.
It's painful. It's very painful.
We had little patches of regular, just the little black ants, and we had red ants, but they weren't truly fire ants. Those ones did hurt more than the black ants when they stung you
uh-huh.
or bit you or whatever they do, but it wasn't a true.
They're nothing compared
no.
to a fire ant.
No,
it's like all of a sudden you feel like that's why they call it a fire
sure.
ant. You feel like you're burning.
Yeah, well there you go.
God,
something I didn't know. That's just like it's out of a horror movie. I mean, the whole thing is out of a horror movie, but I had never heard of such a concept. And it had a video with it too. I'm like, oh my God.
So is it like there's enough of it they're putting warnings out?
I don't know. I mean, it's just another thing that I think they're saying, look out for it. It's another hazard that's out there in the waters.
Yeah.
So unless you need to be in the waters, or you're escaping and you're going through the waters to get from point A to point B, don't go play in the waters just for fun.
Sure.
You know, it's not recreation time. And I think most people are heeding that, but yeah, every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I thought that was it's creepy.
Yeah.
Not a ghost creepy, but creepy.
Yeah.
855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go to our first caller. Hi, you are on the air.
Hi, this is Alex from Arkansas. So I just heard a story about a woman who said that she was feeling all these negative energies once she opened herself up, like her beacon, basically, to the paranormal on the other side. And that actually did help. It started probably... Well, it originally started when I got my tarot cards. I got them last year, and I was still learning how to use them. And when school started, I would let my friends play with them. And my schools are of mixed religions. You've got everything from atheists to Buddhists to Muslims and some Christians. So it's a pretty good mix. And some of them, one of my friends, Ashna, I know she didn't mean any harm by this, but she's Muslim, and she was messing with my tarot cards, and she was like, well, let's call Satan. And I didn't hear it at first, and then I heard her asking my cards if Satan was in the room, and I was like, okay, that would be, first of all, that's insulting the cards, messing with them like that, treating them like they are just some sort of toy that you can call upon anything. And second of all, it's very dangerous because she is Muslim, and a dark force such as Satan does exist within her religion, then it will be called, it will manifest. So I took away and I said, listen, you can't mess with these. I figured that because, you know, I was just worried about her, really. I didn't think, I was new to everything. I didn't understand cleansing. I didn't understand energy still being attached to my card. I just didn't think about it. So I figured, all right, I'm good. So I went home that night and I put my cards under my pillow because I usually sleep with them there just so that, you know, they're close to me because honestly, tarot cards are kind of like a small child. But I kept them close and I was asleep. Well, I woke up about 2 a.m., and I don't wake up from nightmares. I don't wake up at night. Once I go to bed, I'm in bed. I woke up with the worst nightmare. I mean, it was not so much as a nightmare, but just the worst feeling. Like, it was just so, like, help. You know, this was, I think I had this image burning in my head of somebody being shot in the back of their head, execution style, and I was like, okay, this isn't all right. It was nobody I knew, though. But it was like, this is weird. So I basically, the next day, I just kind of said, okay, well, I need to do something with these, but I still did not know what I was doing. So I just said, okay, let's just see. And there were a few more nights after that where I was waking up because of nightmares. And I just said, okay, let's just, you know, use them. And once I'd used them for some other things and put that good energy back in, they were fine. So I occasionally have nightmares. The really bad ones, though, come from my mother, who died when I was 13. I don't really know what it is. It happens. But lately, especially as I've gotten into my studies, I've had really consistent nightmares. These past couple weeks, I was visiting some family in a different state, and I travel. I see them pretty consistently, and so being in a new place and sleeping is not hard for me at all. I go to a lot of camps, especially in the summer, so it just didn't strike me as weird, but I kept having them, and they just kept getting progressively worse, and they weren't about my mom anymore. They were about my boyfriend and my friends and, like, things that I cared about, like, things that I knew things that I cared about. They weren't just my past anymore. These were things. One of them was religions rejecting me. It was just really weird, including paganism. I was very disturbed. I was like, this isn't normal. Like, this is not how this goes. And I was actually just about, and I didn't think that any of the nightmares were valid. Like, I figured that, you know, okay, I'm having nightmares about my boyfriend cheating on me, but I highly doubt that has anything to do with this. I've never suspected him of doing so. So I was actually about to call up a high priestess and say, hey, like, something's wrong. I'm having nightmares, and they're pretty consistent. They won't leave me alone. And that actually really just helps, because I think that's probably what's going on, is that I've opened myself up. And you can't just open your door, leave your doors unlocked without any sort of protection inside. So thank you. All right, bye.
I guess the only thing I have to say is make sure you completely know what you're doing before you let somebody else who doesn't know what they're doing play with something like that.
Mm-hmm. You can't leave it out like Yahtzee.
No.
Oh, you're playing Yahtzee. That's fun. If there's not knowledge or understanding of how that stuff works, yeah, it's something to keep locked away.
I think so.
So thank you for sharing your experience with us. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Hi.
Hey, guys. Love the show. This is my second time calling in. But I've been binge listening for the past 2 months, trying to get caught up as quickly as I can. I listen to you guys on my way to work, on my way to school. Anytime I'm in a car while I'm commuting, whenever I'm working on something, I'm just always listening to your podcast. So the story that I have is, about whenever I was younger, and I was around, 8 or 9 years old, and, ding, 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 this involves a bunk bed. But at the time, my family had moved into a brand new house. We were the first family to live there. There was nobody else that had lived in that house. The property was completely brand new. It was a new neighborhood that was being built up. And we had a two-story house at the time. And so my sister and I would share one room, and my brother would share the, or my brother had the room across the hall from us, and in between us was a bathroom. And so the bedroom that we had was the bigger one of the two, and there was a bunk bed in there, like I said, ding, ding, ding. And I slept on the top bunk, and my sister would sleep on the bottom bunk. Now, during this time, we had a lot of negativity going into my household, just a lot of things that were revolving around my parents and stress on their marriage and stress on the family in turn. And so there was just a lot of things that were just really just kind of putting a pressure on the entire house. And so this is the earliest time that I can remember ever experiencing sleep paralysis. I've experienced sleep paralysis several times before, but not like this. So I was really young. I'm in bed, and I'm on the top bunk, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, I just get this feeling that I need to wake up. And so I wake up at the ceiling, and my bed was positioned at that time to be closest to the door. So the door was at the head of the bed, and then it was up against the wall near that door. And we used to sleep with our door open all the time. Not that that's related to the story, but just to kind of give you an idea of like where the bed was positioned in this room. And I open my eyes and I'm looking straight up, and I see this white figure above me. And I'm just staring at this white figure, and it almost looks like as if she's looking down at me floating in a pool. So if I'm at the bottom of the pool and I'm looking up and she's looking down at me, the way that her hair was flowing, the way that what she was wearing was flowing, everything looked like what someone would look like if they were in a pool. And she smiles at me, and I have no idea what to think. And so naturally, as a young child, you just close your eyes, you squeeze your eyes really, really tight because you don't know what to do. And I opened my eyes again, and she was gone. And it just left me as a really, really strange feeling. After that, there were a lot of different things that happened in my house, a lot of negativity that was going on. I don't attribute it to what I had seen that night. But there were a lot of unexplained things that would happen in my house and a lot of strange feelings that I got. And I think a lot of that just had to do with the energy that surrounded my house during this time. And I remember just being super interested in a lot of paranormal things. At that point in time, I've always been really interested in the paranormal. It's just a fascinating curiosity of mine. And so for me, as a young child, seeing that was very interesting because of my fascination with the paranormal. And this expanded from, haunted houses to just your typical kind of paranormal events of hearing things, feeling things, that sort of thing. I distinctly remember that just the feeling I was left with after that wasn't a feeling of comfort, but it wasn't a feeling of fear either. The feelings of somebody acknowledging the fact that there was a lot going on in that house, and that they just, it was like she showed up just to say, hey, I know that you've got a lot going on right now. You're not alone. And almost like she wished that she could do something, but showing herself me was the way that she could just be like, this is the best that I can do for you, to acknowledge the fact that you are dealing with a lot on your plate at such a young age. That's my story. I've got a couple of more stories that I'll definitely share with you, either call in or write in. I love the podcast. You guys are doing such an awesome job. I can't wait to get caught up. And can't wait to hear what ETP episodes you guys have. I'm super excited to just kind of dive into that. Thank you so much for what you guys do, and keep up the great work. Thank you.
So you think it was something just kind of like, I'm here for you, or do you think it was just something that just watches over anyway?
I think sometimes you can have thing, and I'm not sure if this is what, I don't know what I would say happened in this case, but I think sometimes you can have just like the Good Samaritan ghost that comes by. It's not necessarily one that's always there watching over you. It's just, if you're walking down the road and you saw, you know, a child lost or something, you know, you'd go and help.
Sure.
And it's not that you're that child's guardian or watching over person or whatever you want to call it. It's just, I think if you're a ghost too, you can be passing through areas like, oh, this person needs a little help or whatever, and you can do it, and then you kind of mosey on, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that can happen in that realm as well. You?
No, I think I don't know that it's there to watch over her. I just kind of think it was just there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sure. Sure. Thank you for calling in and sharing that experience with us. 855-853-4802 is our number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Hi.
Hi, Tony and Jenny. It's Jennifer from New South Wales, Australia again. I have sent in a recording of one of my paranormal experiences when I was about 10 years old. And I wanted to share with you another, which was actually my very first memory of a paranormal experience, and it is one of many. So now, in my first story, I explained my brother and I had inherited from my mother and grandmother sensitivity to the paranormal. We've always had a very sensitive nature to the paranormal. One story that is, as mentioned, my first experience, and one that is very important to me. I haven't told anyone really this story. I've told my husband, and my mum and my brother are the only other ones who know about this. My younger sister knows, but she was very young at the time. So at the time I was 6 years old, my older brother was about 9.5, and my sister was about 4.5, 5. My brother had just come back from a school camp, and he was really excited, and he was explaining to us a game that he was playing with his school friends. It was called a game called Spotlight. Now, you guys probably have something similar or exactly the same game in the States, but basically it's a game of tag, but in the pitch black with spotlights, with torches. So you run around in the dark, and the way that you get caught is, instead of getting tagged, you get hit with the spotlight, and then you're it. So we were washing up in the kitchen with my mum one night, and he was explaining it. And for me, at the age of 6, the concept didn't really stick with me. I didn't understand why people were running around in the dark, and I was always a very heavy thinker as a child. So he kind of got a bit impatient, and he grabbed a torch from the pantry, and he said, okay, this is what it is, and he turned the kitchen light off, and the whole house was pitch black. And my mum kind of got a bit cranky because she couldn't see what she was doing. So he said, okay, let's go outside. So this was in, about August, July or August in winter in Australia. That's pretty cold. It's pretty dark at about 8 o'clock at night. So he took me outside on the big long wooden deck in our backyard. And the start of the deck is basically where the back door is, and it runs right along the length of the house, and it comes to an end, and then there's some steps and a driveway. So he pushed me outside, and he turned the outside light off, and he closed the blinds. and he stuck his head between the blinds and he started explaining. Now, I didn't really hear anything he said because I was fixated on this figure that was at the end of the deck. Now, this figure I could see clear as day, and I can still see it clear as day in my mind. It was a very tall, thin man. He had blue or black denim jeans, a brown leather biker-style jacket, and a hat. Now, the hat was more of a cap, like a baseball cap, or like a snapback kind of cap. And he was staring right at me. He had blonde hair, blue eyes, and he was Caucasian. And the first thing I thought was he looked like my dad. Now, at the time, my dad was the Australian Capital Territory, which is the state next to New South Wales, or just above New South Wales. And he, I just thought it looked like my dad, but I knew that my dad wasn't home. He was on a business trip. And this figure kind of, I wouldn't say he walked towards me. He more glided a couple of centimetres closer. And he was still very far away. He was probably about 2 or 3 metres away from me. As I mentioned, it was a really long deck. Now, I don't remember hearing my brother, but my brother says to me at the time, he was calling out my name, he was trying to get my attention, telling me to get inside. So then all of a sudden I felt a big pull on my left arm and he dragged me in through the back door and he kind of tossed me to the back of the lounge. This was in the lounge room. And it's quite funny thinking about it now. He knelt down next to me and he said, "Did you see that?" And I didn't answer him. I kind of just looked at him with wide eyes and was very confused. Like I said, I was six. It was my first paranormal experience and I didn't understand the concept of anything really. I mean, for me as a child, and I guess many children, if it's there, it exists. And if something's there and it doesn't exist, it doesn't make sense. So he was kind of trying to get me to say that I saw it. And he said, I know you saw it. I saw you looking at it. You know, you definitely saw the man. And then my mum kind of through the kitchen in could see us in the lounge room and she saw this big fiasco going on. She thought he was roughhousing me and walked over and, you know, what's going on? And he said, there's a man in the back, in the backyard. And we as kids, so there was my older brother and my younger sister and I, we as kids never really lied to our parents. Now, I'm not going to say we never did lie, but we never really did lie. We only just try to hide things if we ever got in trouble. So my mum pretty much believed everything we were saying. We were very good kids and she was quite concerned because little did we know there was a kidnapper around our area at the time. So the area that we grew up in was a place called Penrith, and it's just at the base of the Blue Mountains in Sydney, in New South Wales. So she was quite concerned, and she could see the look on my face and knew that this wasn't a game that we were playing, and she decided to call the police. Now, she was on the phone to the police for a couple of minutes, and the next morning they came to our house, and they sat us down at the kitchen table, and they had all these pictures and folders and everything like that. It was two police officers. It was two men, I remember. They started showing me photos and it went on for about an hour or half an hour or so. It felt like an eternity. Showing me all these photos of, I didn't know at the time, but they were actually photos of any convicted pedophiles or kidnappers who were either on the run or who were incarcerated at the time. So this one police officer in particular, he started to get a bit impatient with me because I couldn't pick anyone. And then he showed me a photo when he instantly took it away. I kind of put my hand on the photo before he slid it away and I said, "That's the man." And he said, no, that's not the man. And I insisted. I said, "No, that's definitely the man that I saw." He said, "No, it's definitely not the man. He's deceased. It's definitely not this guy." And I didn't really understand what that meant. My mum turned to me and she said, "Deceased means he's dead. He's not here anymore." And I looked at my mum. I said, "But that's the man. I saw him. He's not dead. He's alive. And he was in our backyard." The two police officers looked at each other quite concerned. And I think everyone decided that it was time to wrap up. My mum, you know, thanked them for coming out and wrapped it up pretty quickly. And they left pretty quickly. Now, my mum sat me down and she said, "Is that definitely the man that you saw, Jennifer?" And I said, yes, that's definitely the man. I remember it looked like my dad. And when I say it looked like my dad, it looked like my dad at about 21. And at the time, my dad was about 35, 40. So it was more like an image of my dad that I had seen a photo of. So that's my story. It's definitely something that stuck with me. Like I said, it's my first ever paranormal experience. Sorry, it's a little bit long-winded. It's really hard to recount something that happened many years ago. I mean, I'm 25 now and I still remember it clear as day. But like I said, I haven't really told anyone that story. Thank you, Tony and Jenny, for your support and for providing a forum for us sensitive folk to the paranormal. It's nice to know that we can share our stories and not be judged. So thanks, guys. I'll definitely write in or call in again with some more stories, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
You know what I think happened here?
What?
I think the ghost showed up to scare the kids into the house to keep them from possibly being a victim of the kidnapper.
I could see that. Or it's a good ghost.
It's a good ghost. I think it did that instead of just, I'm just going to randomly show up while you guys are playing outside. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it had a purpose.
Sometimes it takes the scare to make it an impact. And maybe the scares, you know, you don't want to have to scare, but sometimes, you know, it's like a kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are kids here, but it's like, you know, your child's about to, you know, looking over the side of a cliff or something, or I suppose a scare would be a bad moment to do that at because they might jump and fall. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like don't walk into traffic, like stop, you know, just a real quick.
Yeah.
I'm going to scare you to make you aware and stop, not just, hey, you might not want to walk in front of that semi, you know?
Sure.
That really doesn't work very often if they're right about to walk in front of the semi. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's probably kind of what was going on here.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that with us. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Real Ghost Stories Online. Hi.
Hi, this is Angela. I live in Georgia right now, but I grew up in New York, and that's where my story takes place. Basically, when I was a younger was probably teenage years, we moved into a house, and it was the first house my father was able to buy for us. He worked really hard to be able to get it, and it was a working class neighborhood, but it was a pretty nice house. And one of the first experiences we had was that my father, you know, there was one of the neighbors was walking by and introduced themselves, and he was like, oh, come inside, come and see, you know, what we're doing and, you know, things like that. And the neighbor was like, oh, no, that's okay. I'm not going to go in there. And my father was like, why? And the neighbor was just kind of like, well, there's scary things in there. You know, people talk about it all the time. There's, you know, something in that house. So my father just kind of blew it off because my dad was a big, you know, tough truck driver guy. And, you know, he didn't really believe, I don't think. I mean, I think he kind of thought maybe there could be things, you know, spirits or ghosts, but he didn't really focus on that or let it bother him. And then as time went on, after we moved in, we did realize that things started to happen. And my dad, because he was a truck driver, he would be out of the house very early in the morning. By 5 o'clock in the morning, my dad was out and off to work. And at the time, my sister and I had separate rooms on the second level, but there was an attic. And when my dad would leave for work that early in the morning, my mom at that time was a stay-at-home mom, and she would usually go back to bed for a little while before we had to get up for school. And she would be lying in bed, and she could hear noises up in the attic. She can hear, like, boxes, the sound of, like, boxes being dragged around or somebody just, like, kind of, like, moving things and placing them in, you know, on top of each other or unstacking things and placing them on the floor. That's exactly what it sounded like. But the attic was empty, which was the weird thing. There wasn't any boxes up there. There wasn't anything that needed, you know, could be dragged around. So that was like our first kind of like inkling. And my mom would be like, you know, I sit here and I know I hear things, but, you know, she just kind of blew it off, kind of like, you know, I'm not going to really, you know, let it bother me. My parents are pretty Catholic, so, you know, my mom always had crucifixes and, you know, pictures of, you know, Jesus on the wall and different things like that. But slowly, like I said, things just kept happening. And, like, my mom had clotheslines in the backyard. It was during the time where people would actually hang their clothes outside to dry. Maybe people still do. But, you know, so she went outside to hang some clothes one day. And when she came back to go into the house, we had a side door that led out into the backyard. She couldn't get in, and it was locked. And she just, you know, she couldn't get back in the house. And she's just like, I don't understand. She's like, how is this door locked? I mean, it was like a deadbolt kind of door. So unless you closed it and deadbolted it, you know, it wouldn't, it should be open. So she actually had to stay outside until my sister and I got home from school. So we had keys, obviously, and we were able to open the door and, you know, let her in the house. And we were like, Mom, why are you sitting out here? And she's just like, the door's locked. She's like, I don't know. I couldn't get back in. So that was another thing. It's just the weirdest thing. And then we had a cat, and my cat, you know, I would put the cat, you know, my cat had a bed and a whole thing set up in the basement. So at night when it was time for me to go to sleep, I would open up the door that led to the basement so my cat could go down. And I remember always having the hardest time getting him to go down to the basement to go sleep. And I just chalked it up to he didn't want to leave me. You know, he just wanted to be upstairs or be with us and stuff. And then my mother would always mention that when she would open the door in the morning, because it was this door in the kitchen and you had to open it to get out through the side door, which was used a lot. And then there was also stairs that led to the basement. So whenever she opened up that door, the cat was just like right there, like right at the edge of the door. Like she had not gone down the steps or spent any time in the basement at all. And, you know, I just started feeling so bad that I would let him sleep in my room because I just was like, that's terrible. Why is he like crunched up sleeping, you know, against the door like that? Why won't he go down to the basement? Then another time, it was just the weirdest thing. My dad came home, and I was actually out shopping with my sister and my mom. We weren't even home. And my dad came home early, and he had gone to this bakery that we really loved, and he had gotten this bread that we liked and this cheese. And, you know, he liked to make, like, these little sandwiches. So he heard, like, somebody. We had a den that was off the living room, and the living room was off the kitchen. So he's in the kitchen, and he's, like, taking out the bread and taking out the cheese, and he hears somebody come out of the den, close the door to the den, and run up the stairs. So he assumed it was me because I was always the one running up and down the stairs. And he was like, he called upstairs. He was like, Angie, I'm home, and I have some of the bread, and I have cheese. Come down and have a sandwich. And nothing, you know, he just waited and waited and nobody came downstairs. So he was like, you know, he called upstairs again and no answer. So when we came home from shopping, we found him standing, you know, by his car. He used to sometimes just like to stand outside, lean against his car, you know, in the driveway. And we found him, you know, standing outside, and we're like, hey, Pop, you know, what's up? How you doing? And, you know, we could tell that he was, like, startled because he wasn't afraid of anything, and he didn't really, you know, he wasn't, like I said, that kind of person. He was this big, tough truck driver, and, you know, so he's just like, you know, the weirdest thing happened. And he told us about it, and we were just kind of like, whoa, you know, that's crazy. Because he specifically heard somebody come out of the den, close the door, because it was a door that made, like, a lot of noise when you closed it, and go running up the stairs. So it wasn't even, like, walking. So, you know, when he told us about it, we were like, oh, my God. So it was just kind of, like, crazy. And we just, like, little things like that would just happen all the time. And we found out later on that the person who originally owned the house was an older couple. And when they passed away, they left the house to their son, and they didn't want it sold. They wanted their son to keep it. But the wife of the son wasn't really keen on her in-laws, and she wasn't keen on keeping the house, so she made him sell it. And when they sold it, supposedly the wife made a comment like, oh, I'm so glad we've gotten rid of it. This, you know, she never liked me anyway. And I think she was referring to, you know, her mother-in-law. And, you know, so I don't know if it was this older couple that maybe they didn't like the fact that the house was sold, you know, when it shouldn't have been. I'm not sure. So it was just very just weird. Like I said, like little things like that would happen all the time. I mean, later on, my sister actually moved up to the attic and made it her bedroom. So, you know, I think that things kind of calmed down, but in the beginning it was just really freaky and creepy. And so, you know, just like lots of noises that went bump in the night. And, you know, obviously things like that, like that I just described. So, I guess, you know, I'm not sure what you make of it. Like I said, later on, it seemed to calm down a bit, and it didn't always, you know, we lived there just fine. And, you know, we were freaked out every now and then, but, you know, nothing, it was nothing serious and nobody ever got hurt. So I don't know. Anyway, I wanted to share the story, like I said, that happened to me growing up in Long Island, New York. Okay, I will call back with a different story later on that I have also. Thank you very much. I love you guys. Bye.
I think when people die and they expect, you know, to dictate what you're going to do with their stuff beyond a will. Mm-hmm. I mean, saying, here, I leave you the house, but you can't sell it. You know, that's like, I think that's probably what caused the haunting, just because they're so attached to this house,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to control the situation.
From the grave.
From the grave. And it's kind of like, you know, you're dead. What does it really matter if they sell the house or not?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave a series of envelopes that everyone has to open once a year, and it's going to have some sort of weird dictation from me of what my family, I'd like them to be doing.
Oh, I'm sure everybody's going to look forward to that shit.
It's time to open the Tony envelope.
Uh-huh.
They'll be good ones, but okay, everybody go to an amusement park, you know, and this is one of my final wishes. And then the next will be like, I think you need to mow the lawn around the entire cemetery using nothing but a weed eater. This is one of my final wishes. Just random shit.
Yeah, I don't get people that are so imposing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I get like where you know you're sentimental about the house and all that, but at some point it's, I think you can't be 100%. You must keep the house. I mean, you're gone. Hopefully others are as attached or have an attachment to it, and if they are able to keep it, they'll keep it. But you know, life happens.
Well, but I would think that the ghosts would be happy that somebody bought the house that wanted it and is going to take care of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it needs to be looked at. But I don't think the ghosts always see it from that perspective.
Well, they need to.
The living don't half the time either, so.
I know.
I can't just blame the ghosts. There you go. That wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, help us stay on the air. Become an EPP, extra podcast person. Sign up to be one on our website at ghostpodcast.com. It's only $5 a month. Get access to all 160 or so EPP bonus episodes, exclusive video content, and a whole lot more. Check it out at ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.